The World Travel and Dining Guide with Chef Michael Glotz is now on the air. Chef Michael is a lifetime chef, CIA graduate, restaurateur, world traveler, and radio TV host. Sit back, relax, and listen to Chef Michael take you on a journey to great restaurants and travel destinations and some super culinary tips. And now, here is Chef Michael Glotz.
You're listening to Chef Michael Glotz on the World Travel and Dining Guide. Welcome, everyone. Destination Paris. Well, I felt like I was in Paris, but I was really in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hard to believe. At a wonderful French restaurant called Le Café de Paris, and it's located at 715 East Las Olas Boulevard in Fort Lauderdale. It has been continuously operated by owner Louis Flamatti since 1962 as really the oldest and one of the most deliciously authentic French restaurants in South Florida. It was such a joy to find it. I just love the perpetuation of classic, old-school, celebrated haute cuisine. And it seems to be disappearing in today's world of foams and infusions, and everyone's on a diet, and I'm vegan, and I'm, you know, all these different restaurants and Asian fusion stuff going on. Sometimes it's really great to return back to the basics, back to the roots of this classic haute cuisine that really sort of started it all so long ago. Louis Flamatti and his staff at Le Café de Paris in Fort Lauderdale really hit it on the head. And if you go back and you think about when they opened it in 1962, I could just picture the place. I can picture fashionable ladies. It was like the place. Everyone's all dressed up, and the fashionable ladies are meeting the power brokers, and they're dining on escargots and duck l'orange and beef Wellington. And it's just a wonderful day gone by. But it can still be here today if you take the opportunity to visit, because it can take you right back. They've got some wonderful seats out on the street underneath an awning. And while it's not 1961 on the street, and you can tell that by the cars parked out front and so on, certainly it's just got this wonderful cafe feeling with people walking by and traffic and hustle and bustle. I loved the inside dining room where I sat. It was really beautiful. A great big grand piano tinkling away with some awesome French music. I was just melted in my seat. And inside the main dining room where I was seated, it sort of looks like a Paris street, just the way they've created the ambiance. You sort of really, if you close your eyes and slowly open them again, you really feel like you could be in Paris in 1961 having this great dinner when the Le Café de Paris was born. I start out, the menu was really exciting. There was so much on there. You know, it's why I love menus that just make you want to go back again and again and again. And this was one of those types of menus. I started with a steak tartare, classic, hand-minced raw beef tenderloin. Oh, it was seasoned perfectly with some capers. There was some cracked black pepper, maybe even a little bit of cayenne or Tabasco or something. There was a little bit of warmth to it in the back of my throat. Richness of egg yolk and some shallots and chopped parsley. And they served it with frites, classic, shoelace fries, real thin sort of fries, just perfect, and some toasted brioche. Oh, it was amazing. I think I had a rosé from Provence that I was drinking with it, and it was just a joy to eat this kind of food again. I moved into a classic Coquille Saint-Jacques, of course, the beautiful sea scallops that are done in this wonderful cream sauce with Parmesan cheese and mushrooms, and their presentation was really just perfect. It was in a big, beautiful scallop shell, and it was kind of broiled over, grilled slightly, so you had the wonderful browning on the top of it underneath the broiler. Oh, the scallops were delicious and plump and moist and perfectly cooked, sauces well seasoned, just really beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Next, you're going to think I eat a lot of food when I tell you all the things I had to eat. I do eat a lot of food, but I had a couple of dinner companions, and they were kind enough to share, but that's one of the prerequisites of having dinner with me, is you have to share. Classic baked oysters with spinach and hollandaise sauce. It doesn't get any better than that. Fresh oysters just opened in the kitchen, a little bit of wilted spinach on top, a little bit of hollandaise sauce. Toss them under the broiler just enough to glaze the hollandaise sauce. The oysters inside are still just barely cooked, just warm slightly, nice and briny and plump. They're absolutely delicious. My mouth is watering here. I'm telling you about my dinner. I want to go back tonight. Let's see. Entrees. I opted for beef Wellington because I wanted to have that kind of a classic dish. And there were so many things on the menu to have. It was really hard to choose. but I chose the classic beef Wellington, of course, spread with a little pate, a little mushroom, what we call duxelles. It's where we finally grind mushrooms and we cook them down with a little white wine and shallot and make them nice and dry and very intense, really capture the flavor of the mushroom. That's put on top of the pate, on top of the meat, and the whole thing is wrapped in puff pastry. What I always find amazing when a chef can cook a beef Wellington and the pastry is perfectly browned and cooked on the outside, and the meat is perfect doneness, just the way I ordered it on the inside. And guess what? At Le Café de Paris, they nailed it. It was really amazing. The accompaniments on the plate, the great little red wine reduction sauce. Let's see, I had sort of like a scallop potato gratin on the plate, a broiled tomato. I mean, it was truly haute cuisine at its best. One of my dinner companions opted for the steak au poivre, which is something I make at home all the time, so I tend not to eat it out. But it was done with a great peppercorn sauce, flambéed tableside. Who does that anymore? Most people don't even know what a guéridon is. That guéridon is that wheeling cart that they bring over. Finished the steak tableside, a little cognac in the pan, some flames up in the air. Was just a fabulous presentation. When you put your fork in there, oh my. And the sauce, I was like reaching over the table, dragging my meat through his sauce because it was just fabulous, and more bread because more sauce. It was just that kind of an amazing meal. We finished it off with crepe Suzette. Who could believe that one could eat dessert after the meal I've just described to you? But crepe Suzette was so light and so easy. You know, I love chocolate and I love cream and I love ice cream and custards and all these things. I couldn't imagine eating a big dessert like that after a meal like this. The waiter said, I'm going to make you some crepe Suzette, also tableside. And he wheeled the guéridon over. And it was just amazing. Just a simple sauté of the crepes, a little sauce. He made a little fresh citrus, a little orange squeeze in there, a little cognac, a little brandy, a little Grand Marnier. He flamed it, folded the crepes over one at a time, presented it on our plate. It was absolutely beautiful and tasty and light and wonderful and a perfect way to end the meal. So if you find yourself able to get to the Fort Lauderdale area in a stop at Café de Paris at 715 Las Olas, and you'll be really happy you did. There's some other great things going on the street there as well. Grand Forno Bakery right up the street because I didn't have enough to eat. I had to stop for an affogato at Pane Dolce, which was a great little Italian bakery where they take the stracciata gelato, which is a wonderful vanilla bean ice cream that's got threads of chocolate in it, and they pour a shot of espresso over it. That was my late night snack as I was walking the streets, a little frustrated because I wanted a cigar. And Maccabi Cigars right there on Las Olas was already closed for the evening. But certainly something that I will stop back at and give a try to. There's also some other great restaurants and wine shops and things going on there on Las Olas. I noticed a place called Cheese Culture, which made me want to go back. Couldn't eat anymore. I ate so much already. I was just walking the street and reading menus. There was such a great energy there. And I was there on a Sunday night. I can imagine what the energy is like on Las Olas on a Friday or Saturday night. But a wonderful place called Cheese Culture. And looking at their menu and through the windows, people were having a great time. A great menu of sandwiches and charcuterie plates and cheese plates. You know, how nice it is to sit outside on their terrace and sample three or four different cheeses and some great charcuterie, some sausages and prosciuttos and wonderful meats and breads. Have a great bottle of wine. It's just really a great place to spend a little bit of time. Got to tell you a quick story, though, about Crepe Suzette as I'm reminded of it. As I wondered where the name came from, Crepe Suzette. So I checked it out. In 1895, there was a restaurant in Monte Carlo, also called the Café de Paris, ironically. A 14-year-old waiter's assistant stepped into the guéridon when the waiter walked away, spilled a little cognac into the pan where the crepes were sitting. It caught fire. The thing sort of flamed. The little waiter's assistant got sort of scared, started to serve the crepes on a plate, and did to the table before him, much to everyone's amazement. Didn't really know what he was doing. It was a total mistake. The dining guest happened to be the Prince of Wales, the future King Edward VII of England, and his dinner guest was a gal by the name of Suzette. And with mock ferocity, the future king suggested that the waiter name the crepes after his guest, and thus the beginning of Crepe Suzette. You're listening to Chef Michael Glotz on the World Travel and Dining Guide. Hello and welcome to the World Travel and Dining Guide. I'm your host at the moment, Chef Michael Glotz, and I'd like to hear from you. You can always email me at chefmichael@foodspacemedia.com. Would love to hear if you want to hear about specific topics or things in future shows, and also would love to know how you're listening to us. One of the many ways you can hear the show is to go to your mobile device and download the app called Gab1, which you'll find in the iTunes or Play Store stores, and download that to your phone. You can listen to us there as well while you're on the move. We'd love to hear how you're listening to the show. So let's talk about method and techniques a little bit about cooking at home, because I'm a chef and I cook at home and I cook in my restaurant. I'm always cooking something. I'm certainly always eating something. And so much of what we do as restaurant chefs, as professional chefs, is really understanding methods and techniques. So I want to share some things with you on this broadcast and on future shows as well. You may be listening to us as a rebroadcast or at different times this particular show, but as I'm speaking to you right now, this Friday is going to be July 4th. And now I know Independence Day, ball games, parades, fireworks, not this guy. I'm firing up the grill because July 4th to me is a grilling day. I'm getting some great craft beers, some great wine, lighting up a cigar. I'm firing up that grill and I'm going to cook some great dinner for some friends because that's what it's all about. So let's talk about grilling a little bit. It you know, in the 4th of July weekend is the perfect summer weekend to get your grilling groove on. And make this the summer that you really work on your grilling groove, as I'm going to call it, okay? So if you got a grill, anything can hit the grill. It's not just for burgers and dogs, trust me, and steaks. Think sausages, fish, chickens, anything. Vegetables, potatoes, even desserts. Grill your dessert. I know you think I'm crazy. And everybody's got their favorite grill, but mine is the classic Weber kettle grill. I just love that grill. And I've had gas grills, and I've had other fancy things. I've even had little tabletop hibachis. They all work. They're all great in their own little way. My favorite is the classic Weber kettle because you can do so much with it. You can sort of smoke with it, control your temperature a little bit more. Kind of hard to control your temperature with the gas grill. All you're doing is a flame up and down, but you can't control the heat that's within the grill itself when it's closed. As much as with a kettle grill, where you really can, by opening and closing vents and adjusting your fire a little bit, can have a lot of fun with it. So I always build my fire to one side of the grill. Don't build it in the center. Build it off to one side. I love these. I've got one of these. I don't even know what they're called, but they're kind of like a fire chute where you can actually pile your charcoal into that and build it straight up and down. What you're doing is you're creating a flue, a draft, so your charcoal lights much quicker that way if you use one of these little tools. I think they're like $10 or something. And always use real, natural, hardwood charcoal. Don't opt for these supermarket charcoals that are loaded with lighter fluid already and just throw a match on them, because guess what? You're putting all those chemicals in your body. More importantly, you're putting those flavors into your food, and you don't want to do that. Never use lighter fluid. I use a brown paper bag. I crumple it up, put it in the bottom of this charcoal flue that I was just telling you about, pile my charcoal on top of it, light a match to the paper in like 30 minutes. I got an amazing fire going outside. Then you take this fire starter flue and you just tip it upside down and dump all your charcoal into the side of the grill. Again, off to one side. If you don't have one of those flues, don't worry about it. Just make a nice mound of charcoal, nice pyramid mound of charcoal off to one side and put the crumpled paper underneath the charcoal. It'll work the same. Not quite as good, but you'll still get it going. Why am I building the fire to one side? Because that's how I'm going to control my heat. There's some food that you want to grill directly over the flame, and there's some foods that you want to grill off to the side of the flame, so direct and indirect cooking. And that's really one of the tricks to cooking on a grill, is really understanding the heat. If you just build one big giant fire in the center of the grill, and all of a sudden you're having flare-ups, and oh my God, and the chicken's burning on the outside, and it's still raw on the inside, and you quick hurry up, take the chicken off the grill, throw some water on there, you have no control over your fire. If you build the fire off to one side, now you can put your food anywhere you want on the grill. Cook it over the direct heat if you want to. Cook it off to the side if you need to. Depends on what you're cooking. I'll tell you a little about that. Steaks and burgers, for example, classic things to throw on the grill. You want to cook them over direct heat. You want to throw those babies right over the smoking hot fire. And what you want to do is season them. Always season your food before you cook it. Really important on a grill. If you take a steak and you cook it on the grill with no salt and pepper on it, then you take it off the grill and at the table you put salt and pepper on it, that's okay, but if you season it with salt and pepper before you cook it, those flavors work right into the meat, and they're going to give you so much more flavor. You're really going to taste the beef, and it's just going to all come together. Sprinkling it on top at the end, you taste the meat, then you taste the salt, then you taste the pepper. It's like three separate elements. If you season before you cook, it kind of all comes together. Cook your steaks and your burgers directly over the fire. and only turn them once. Work on leaving it there. Don't keep lifting the lid and checking on it because you're letting off valuable heat. Throw your steak, your burger on the fire, leave it there. What you're trying to do is create a nice char, a nice natural caramelization of the meat from the fire, because caramelization, that browning that you get, that char you get, that's all flavor, right? So don't flip your hamburger back and forth, your steak back and forth. Flip it once. When you got a really nice char and a nice caramelization, a nice crust on that steak or on that burger, now flip it over. Do the same thing on the other side, pull it off. If you've got a good hot fire, depending on the thickness of your steak or the thickness of your burger or how well you like it done or how rare you like it done, could be just a matter of minutes what I'm talking about. That's why a hot fire is so important. Don't skimp on the charcoal. Make yourself a really strong hot fire. If you're a guy like me, like a minute on each side is fine because I love my meat really, really rare. What else can you throw on the grill? Of course, it's easy. Fish. Salmon is great on a grill. Tuna is great on a grill. Think vegetables. Think, you know, throwing corn on the cob on the grill. Don't peel the husks off it. Leave the husks on. Throw it on there until the husks are black. And what you're going to get is this really nice roasted flavor into the corn. So now at the table, you can just peel it away. The corn is cooked on the inside, all steamy, beautiful golden yellow or white. But you've got all this charred flavor from the charred husks that reach into the corn. Delicious. Potatoes. Slice your potatoes. A little olive oil, salt, pepper. Throw them on the grill with your steak or with your burger. You got to adjust your grill times a little bit. You know, if you're trying to cook a thick slice of potato on the grill, you might throw that on before your steak. If the potato slice is done first, you can always pull that off to the side or take it into the kitchen and kind of keep it warm as you're waiting for the rest of your meal to cook. Never have your steak waiting for your potatoes. Let your potatoes wait for your steak. Other things you could throw on a grill. Think salad. Hey, how about grilling a salad? Does that sound crazy or what? It's delicious. Think sturdy greens to throw on a grill. Things like radicchio, kale, endive, escarole, dandelions. These are all things that are fabulous on a grill. Season them up with a little salt and pepper, drizzle a little olive oil on them, toss them in a bowl, throw them directly over the flame. Now, we're talking 30 seconds to a minute. What you want to get is a little charring. You don't want to wilt them down to nothing. What you want to do is put them over that hot fire, a little bit of olive oil. That's going to help a little flare up. You're going to want a little charring on those greens. Really fabulous. Take them off the grill. Squeeze a little fresh lime juice over them. Maybe grate a little cheese over them. Forget about store-bought salad dressings and so on. You won't need it. You got such wonderful flavor from the grilling and the little bit of olive oil that now if you just squeeze a little lemon or lime over it for some bright acidity, you got a great salad. How about dessert? Did I say dessert on the grill? I sure did. I love to take fresh peaches, especially the stone-free peaches that you can kind of cut in half and get the pit out really easy. Rub a little olive oil on them. You can even sprinkle a little sugar on them if you want them a little sweeter, a little caramelized. I don't, but you can do that. You can put a little salt and pepper on them if you like to bring a little savoriness into the peach, right? Grill them. Cut side down, right? Get a nice little char on that side of them, little grill marks. Flip them over. Put a little blue cheese on the cut edge. Let it kind of ooze and melt in there. Serve that up with some great shortbread cookies or maybe a flaky cookie like a palmier, and you end up with a really fun gourmet play on a classic fruit and cheese plate. You did it on the grill. Your friends are going to think you're Superman with food. They're going to be really excited. So think texture and flavor. Don't pre-cook foods. My dad, bless him, he was a great, great, great father and great grilling chef. He always pre-cooked his chicken because he didn't like flare-ups. So what you had was tasteless chicken on the grill. Cook your chicken off to the side. Don't cook it over the direct flame. Now you're not going to have flare-ups. That's why you built the fire to one side, right? Especially if you've got that nice Weber kettle grill. Put all your chicken away from the flame on the other side. Put the lid on it. Now it's like baking the chicken in the oven, but you're going to get all those wonderful grilling flavors. And if you have the opportunity to throw some wood chips in there, or maybe you've got some wood that you cut out of your yard, or buy some wood chips, toss those in there, and you've got some wonderful flavors going on in addition to the grilling and no flare-ups, and your chicken is going to be moist, delicious, and wonderful without pre-cooking. So build that fire to one side. You'll be glad you did. So email me at chefmichaelguatz@foodspacemedia.com. I'd love to hear from you. You're listening to Chef Michael Glotz on the World Travel and Dining Guide. I'd love to hear from you. You may email me at chefmichael@foodspacemedia.com. So sit back in your chair for a moment, close your eyes, relax, take a deep breath. You wake up slowly and you think, wow, I had a dream last night. I don't live in the rat race anymore, but in this dream, I'd given up everything, and I was living my life out on a tiny Caribbean island. Let's say hello to Chef Kurt Sukup. He's made that dream come true. Hello, Kurt.
Hi, how are you, Chef?
Great. Great to have you on the line. Our destination
Thanks
today is
me.
Vieques. It's a tiny little island 8 miles off the eastern coast of Puerto Rico and a municipality of its commonwealth. Along with its neighboring island of Culebra, it's oftentimes referred to as the Spanish Virgin Islands, following over 400 years of Spanish occupation that ended with the Spanish-American War. And today, the island is a very much looked at tourist destination. It's kind of for the lazy vacation. You know, the beach going, book reading, I think I drank too much rum kind of vacation. And who doesn't love that? I know that's my favorite kind of vacation. And then there's guys like Chef Kurt. What's the matter, Chef? Not enough challenges running a restaurant stateside? You have to move to a little rock in the middle of the ocean?
Yeah, you know, we get bored of, deliveries coming all the time. You know, we'd like to have to go to an airport now and get our deliveries or wait for the ferry to come in and hope that all your product's going to be there. That's a little more challenging. So we moved here to create a little more stress on ourselves.
Exactly. So, folks, if you've never been to Vieques, it's 21 miles long by 4 miles wide. It's a beautiful little strip of island. As I said, about 8 miles off the coast of Puerto Rico. It's absolutely beautiful. But the only way to get there is by a small little plane or by boat. So that means everything, which means that guys like Chef Kurt, he doesn't have vendors coming to him as we do stateside, dropping off deliveries at our back door. He has to go to the airport and pick up something that was sent to him at pretty unfair prices, right?
Yes. I mean, food cost here is much higher than you would see in the States. For example, a case of portobello mushrooms, which in the States is probably $9. We're paying $18.
Sure.
So it's, your price point's a little higher, but It's almost an everyday thing where you're taking a drive to the ferry, you'll get a text message either to the ferry or to the airport. You get a text message saying, hey, your order's here, and you have to get in your car, usually in the middle of lunch, and go to the airport, pick up your packages, and race back to work
sure.
And hope everything's in the package.
Because it's perishable food. It's sitting at the airport.
Yep.
And folks,
yep.
If you've ever traveled to little destinations, this airport is, while it's modern, it's tiny, and your box is just sitting there in the hot Caribbean weather, and you've got perishables in it. And so not only do those mushrooms or anything else, Chef, cost you more money, but then you got to pay the cost of getting it there.
Oh, yeah, the freight. Usually you got to be very careful, but, about 65 to 70 cents a pound on what's being transported over.
Sure.
I mean, we're very lucky now. There's a couple third-party carriers where they'll pick the stuff up on the island of Puerto Rico and ferry it over to you, and even now deliver it to you once a week, which is pretty good. It's gotten a little more beneficial in the future.
So as travelers, as tourists, folks, you have to think about those sorts of things when you go to a little island like Vieques, and there's many destinations in the world that are like that, where you may pay more premium prices for food that you might think is a little bit more simplistic, say perhaps, than you have in a destination in a big city. But listen to what just even Chef Kurt goes through on this little island. It's pretty challenging. So now you do have some Vieques food available to you, because I know that you have a gentleman on the island by the name of John Town who built a brick oven at his home.
Yes, he has a beautiful, number one, they've been on the island for 15 years. John and Judy Towns built a beautiful brick oven in their beautiful home that overlooks Culebra, and he bakes bread for us. He bakes our baguettes that we use for our gorgonzola bread, as well as all the hamburger buns that we use in the restaurant for, whether it be a blackened fish sandwich or a basic burger. And now he makes a little slider buns for us with the wasabi seeds on it, and we do a seafood trio, which has got mahi, kingfish, and snapper on it.
Wow.
So yeah, he does an amazing job with all the bread, and that's one benefit we have, where we can get at least bread consistently, because hey, he's right there and he bakes it for you.
Sure. Imagine on a tiny little island like that, you've got somebody that builds a brick oven in their home and they're baking bread for a restaurant. I just think that's so awesome.
And he's baking it for many of the restaurants, so I mean that's the great thing.
Great. So let's try to get folks to be able to picture your restaurant. You are on what's called the Malecón, and the Malecón in Spanish, I guess, really translates to like a boardwalk. Is that true?
Yes.
¿Hablo usted español?
Piquito.
Oh, okay. So it's Vieques is one of those Spanglish islands where it helps you a little bit if you know a little bit of Spanish, even enough
yes,
to get
by. Yes, it helps you a lot if you know some Spanish.
Sure. But you're directly across from the water. That's what you stare at all day. Well, I guess you stare at pots and pans.
But right now I'm fortunate enough to be staring at the ocean because I'm sitting in the restaurant overlooking the water. So the guests, when they dine here, they get to have a beautiful ocean view. We have a guest house here as well with 8 rooms, but
fabulous.
The ocean view is very nice.
Absolutely. Now, I've been to Bananas on Vieques before you and your wife, Kelly, were chefing it, and it was one of my favorite spots to go and just have a drink. I mean, certainly food and all, but just you melt there because it is the quintessential Caribbean bar where you're staring at the water and you're sipping on your rum punch and you just melt.
Yeah, it's one of the oldest restaurants on the island. We're I think the third or fourth owner over the course of 30 years, or maybe even a little longer. I should probably know a little more history. Yeah. But you're right. It can, you just lose the day by sitting there having a couple of rum punches or Dirty Banana, which is one of the ones we're known for, which is basically just a banana blended with a lot of different liquors and chocolate, which is excellent.
Wow. You were making me hungry earlier, talking about the bread and the sliders and all that. Now I'm getting like, I need a cocktail.
Which is not unusual for us sometimes to have a cocktail by 2 o'clock.
Well, it's one of the few benefits of living in the Caribbean. You can let those kind of rules that we have stateside go by, right?
Yep, absolutely.
I found, living in the Caribbean myself for a number of years, that one of the hardest parts about being in the restaurant business is most of what you deal with is tourists. So
yep.
Everybody's on vacation except you.
That's true. And what's really nice about tourists is that you get to tell the people the same story over and over again because you see it's a different group of people next week. So you never get bored with talking with people, which is wonderful.
See, now I'm in a non-tourist destination, and everybody looks at me and goes, Chef Michael, you've already told us that story.
Yeah.
So they get bored with me pretty quickly. It's why I had to start a radio show so I can retell my stories all over again. So.
Yeah, see, I could tell the same story. Where are you from? Well, what do you do? Oh, yeah. Right. It doesn't matter how many times a day I said it because they're not going to be here next week.
Yeah, exactly. So in a quick minute or so, tell us why Vieques. What brought you there and why you're doing this?
Well, since I was a kid, I wanted to own a restaurant in the Caribbean. Now, we searched all over the Caribbean, whether it be Jamaica, St. Martin, St. Thomas, St. John, for different reasons or another, we did not choose any of those islands. We did look at Culebra, and someone said, hey, why don't you try Vieques? And we flew over and fell in love with the island. Now, I've been in the business for 30 years, but had always wanted an island-type restaurant. Fell in love with the island 6 years ago and made the move to come down here to open a restaurant, which was called Bravo Beach Restaurant. And we did that for 2 seasons. And that ended up closing due to a sale. And then we took a restaurant called Veritas, which is in the center of the island, which is at the Crow's Nest Inn. And we did that for 2 seasons. But then my father got sick, and we had to move home. But then the opportunity came about where we could, Bananas became available. And, of course, we love the island so much, we decided, hey, let's purchase Bananas and basically sell our restaurant we had up north and a banquet facility and move back down to Vieques. And here we are. We've been here 5 months now, and it's going great.
Well, congratulations, Chef Kurt. You and I could talk for a long time. We're going to have to put you on another show because we've run out of time. But we appreciate it. And folks, get to Vieques Island in Puerto Rico and go see Chef Kurt at Bananas. You're listening to Food Space Radio on the World Travel and Dining Guide. You're listening to Chef Michael Glotz on the World Travel and Dining Guide. It's time to sip some wine. Everybody loves wine. Now, you may be listening at the show early in the morning or at some odd time where maybe you think, why is he sipping wine right now? But it's where I'm recording it. It's time to sip wine. And quite frankly, whenever you're listening to it, it's time to sip wine. It's always noon somewhere in the world. And any excuse to drink a great, great glass of wine. And that's the trick. Make it a great glass of wine. What I'm drinking today is a wine that you would never order in a restaurant for one reason and one reason only. You can't pronounce it. So let's hope I do a good job with it. It's called Volkenberg Gewürztraminer. And as a restaurateur, I always have a hard time selling Gewürztraminers in my restaurant. I think it's a wonderful food wine, but people shy from it because they're afraid they're not going to be able to pronounce it correctly. Now, let me tell you, as a restaurateur, I don't care how badly you pronounce your wine. I'm happy you're ordering some wine. So go ahead, fumble and stumble through the name a little bit. Point to it on the wine list when your waiter comes over. Don't worry about ordering things you can't pronounce. The pronunciation is not important. What's important is what's in the glass. So this is a Gewürztraminer. This comes from Germany, from the Pfalz region, which is in western Germany, home of the Rhine River area. And this is like the second largest wine-producing region in Germany. And when we think German wines, we think sweet wines, oftentimes Rieslings, Gewürztraminer, Muscat grape, things like that. Those wines pair well with German cuisine, but guess what? They pair really well with sort of modern-day cuisine and fusion cuisines that we tend to eat now in restaurants, and they also pair great with grilling. So they make perfect summertime wines. So Gewürztraminer literally in Germany means spicy flour. So right away I'm telling you that. You should know that this wine has got some of those wonderful characteristics. I'm smelling it right now, my nose in the glass, and it just has this wonderful, very fragrant sort of smell of lychees and sweet roses. And those classic Gewürztraminer aromas of nutmeg, cinnamon, cloves, the spiciness of the flour, if you will, in the Gewürztraminer kind of really comes through on the nose. And when you sip it, it's wonderfully off dry, not too sweet, just a little hint of residual sugar. Oh, which really ties together nicely with the bright, balanced acidity in the wine. It's very full-bodied. And it's got flavors of sort of melons and I think ripe tree fruits, things like peaches and pears, really ripe and sweet. So the sweetness seems to be almost accentuated a little bit by the fruit flavors when the wine itself really isn't as sweet. What do you want to do with this wine? First of all, you want to serve it cold. Remember, wine serving temperatures are so important. And this is one of those wines you really want to serve 40 to 50 degrees, right? Not right at refrigerator temperature, but maybe it's on the counter for 10 to 20 minutes before you're going to open it. Just let it warm up just ever so slightly. If it's bone-chillingly cold out of the refrigerator, you're not going to taste all these wonderful flavors as much. But that's okay. Bring it right out of the refrigerator because you forgot to pull it. It's fine. Pour everybody a glass, and you'll see it open up and develop in the glass as it warms up a little bit. So this wine in Germany is very popular to make a spritzer with that they call Schorle, and they put a little sparkling water into it. And that really sort of brightens the wine up and makes it sort of a fun wine to drink anytime. So that makes it really great for summertime drinking. You're outside, the weather's hot. You can take this wine. You can certainly enjoy it in that way or splash a little bit of sparkling water into it and suddenly it becomes this great Schorle in German or Spritzer that makes it very refreshing on a hot summer day. I'm going to drink mine just the way it is because I really enjoy the flavors of the wine. It's a great food wine because wines like this that have really sort of wonderful, fragrant aromas about them, it's got a good backbone of fruit and a little spiciness, and a touch of sweetness, all these things going on. Gewürztraminers also tend to have a little bit of frizzante, a little bit of that tickle, that little sparkle in the back of the wine, which is always nice to see. These wines really work well with spicy foods. Think Asian foods. That's a tough food category to pair wine with. People always wonder, well, I'm going out for sushi, or I really like, even think classic basic Asian dishes that you might enjoy in your favorite Chinese takeout, Kung Pao chicken or something, right? And what kind of wine do you drink with that at home? You know, you can certainly always opt for a beer or something sort of refreshing, but to me, wine is the perfect food beverage. These types of wines, Gewürztraminers, go great with spicy Asian cuisine. think sushi, always a difficult one, because if you're like me, you like to load a lot of soy sauce and wasabi onto your sushi, and therefore that makes it really spicy and flavorful. Tough match for wine. A wine like this will sort of bring the flavors together a little bit. And, of course, it's summertime, and that means grilling, a lot of salads, a lot of simple foods. And simple foods tend to have a lot of flavor when you think about your classic summertime picnic where you've got some grilled foods, you've made a couple of cold salads, there's vinegar going on, there's raw onions, there's a little bit of spice, there's fresh herbs, there's all these things on the table in these different dishes. And how do you tie all that together? You can tie it together with a great Gewürztraminer. To me, one of the best parts about a wine like this is they tend to be extremely affordable. The one that I'm drinking, the Valkenburg, this is a 2012. I paid $10 for this retail, and it's a mouthful of wine for $10. It's a great picnic wine. It's a great entertaining wine. It's a great wine before dinner, serving some hors d'oeuvres. You've got some great cheeses spread out and some fruits as guests are arriving. Serve them some of this Gewürztraminer. It's going to just kind of relax everybody and refresh them and kind of get them ready for the meal that's about to begin. Perfect wine for that. I'm excited about this wine because I actually drank a bottle of it last night. I had gotten some green mangoes, and I love mangoes. Who doesn't love a mango, especially this time of year? The wonderful sweetness of a really ripe, juicy mango. You cut into it and it's all bright orange on the inside, and just really wonderful sweet flavors you can turn into ice cream and custards or just enjoy on their own. And this mango was green and hard as a rock, and I was hungry. And so I decided to take the mango and peel it, despite the fact it was green, and I julienned it, meaning I cut it into those thin strips, and I actually had a little mandolin, one of those infomercial tools that I could do that with, that enabled me to almost shred the mango really thin. With that, I put some daikon radish and a little bit of carrot for sweetness, lots of serrano peppers, very thinly sliced to bring up some heat. What else did I toss in there? Oh, lots of fresh cilantro, because that really makes for some great flavors with the heat, the spiciness of the daikon radish I put in there, the sweetness of the mango, the cilantro kind of all brought it all together. And I just seasoned it with a little fresh lime juice, rolled it all together in some rice paper, and I had wonderful little hand summer rolls, raw summer rolls, really crispy and refreshing and delicious. You can make them for a party or serve them at your picnic, but what I'm really talking about is the Gewürztraminer, because all those wonderful flavors, and think about it, the bright, and even though the mango was unripe, it really had a crisp fruitiness about it. The flavor of the mango was there without the sugar content. So you had that wonderful mango fruit flavor. And when your brain thinks fruit, it thinks sweet. Even when it's not very sweet, the brain thinks sweet. So tying that mango in with the spicy daikon radish, the peppers, the cilantro all brought it together. Now the wine, with all that crisp acidity and all those wonderful spicy flavors, the inherent sweetness of the wine, the little bit of residual sugar that's left, and, of course, Gewürztraminer, spicy flour. Think of all these flavors. My mouth for dinner last night was just alive with flavor. A very simple dinner that I cooked at home for myself in like 10 minutes. Really, really easy. Always have some great wines like Gewürztraminer in your pantry. Keep a bottle in the refrigerator. You never know when you're gonna want one. Just really wonderful, wonderful wine. Now, Gewürztraminer can come from other places besides Germany. I've tasted amazing Gewürztraminers from California, Oregon, Washington State. Heck, I've even had some delicious ones, I believe, from Connecticut, Long Island, places that you don't think of wine-producing areas, because the Gewürztraminer grape does really well in cold climates. It needs a little bit of a long summer, but the plant survives well in cold climates. In fact, this particular year in the Pfalz region, 2012, they had a particularly cold summer, but they had an early warm spring. And so the grapes vines blossomed soon, a little bit early, actually. And they ended up with a really great harvest of wine. So I hope you're enjoying the show. You're listening to Chef Michael Glotz on the World Travel and Dining Guide. You may email me at chefmichael@foodspacemedia.com.